Rishabham.
The best.
Yavananam.
Of the untouchables.
Twam.
You.
Rene.
I accept.
Vira.
A great hero.
Ipsitam.
Desired.
Patim.
Husband.
Sankalpaha.
The determination.
Twai.
Unto you.
Bhutanam.
Of all living entities.
Kritaha.
If done.
Kila.
Certainly.
Na.
Never.
Rishyate.
Becomes baffled.
Becomes
translation, approaching the king of the Yavanas, Kalakanya addressed him as a great hero, saying, "My dear sir, you are the best of the untouchables. I am in love with you, and I want you as my husband. I know that no one is baffled if he makes friends with you." So, purport by Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Hari Bol. The words Yavananam Rishabham refers to the king of the Yavanas. The Sanskrit words Yavana and Malecha apply to those who do not follow the Vedic principles. According to the Vedic principles, one should rise early in the morning, take bath, chant Hare Krishna, offer Mangal Arati to the deity, study Vedic literature, take prasad, and engage in dressing and decorating the deities. One must also collect money for the temple expenditures, or if one is a householder, he must go to work in accordance with the prescribed duties of a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra. In this way, one should live a life of spiritual understanding, and this is the Vedic way of understanding of civilization. One who does not follow all these rules and regulations is called a Yavana or Malecha. One should not mistakenly think that these words refer to certain classes of men in other countries. There is no question of limitation according to nationalism. Whether one lives in India or outside of India, he is called a Yavana or Malecha if he does not follow the Vedic principles. One who does not actually follow the hygienic principles prescribed in the Vedic rules and regulations will be subjected to many contagious diseases. Because the students in this Krishna consciousness movement are advised to follow the Vedic principles, they naturally become hygienic. If a person is Krishna conscious, he can work like a young man even if he is 75 or 80 years old. Thus the daughter of Kala, time, cannot overcome a Vaishnava. Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami engaged in writing Chaitanya Charitamrita when he was very old, yet he presented the most wonderful literature about the activities of Lord Chaitanya. Srila Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami began their spiritual lives at a very old age. That is, after they retired from their occupations and family lives, yet they presented many valuable literatures for the advancement of spiritual life. This is confirmed by Srila Srinivasacharya, who praised the Goswamis in this way. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Siddharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Chibhuvane Manyo Sharanya Karo Radha Krishna Padara Vinda Bhajana Nandena Mataliko Vande Rupa Sanatano Raghu Yago Sri Jiva Gopalako. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the six Goswamis, namely Sri Sanatana Goswami, Sri Rupa Goswami, Sri Raghunath Bhatta Goswami, Sri Raghunath Das Goswami, Sri Jiva Goswami, and Sri Gopal Bhatta Goswami, who are very expert in scrutinizingly studying all the revealed scriptures with the aim of establishing eternal religious principles for the benefit of all human beings. Thus they are honored all over the three worlds, and they are worth taking shelter of because they are absorbed in the mood of the gopis and are engaged in the transcendental loving service of Radha and Krishna. Thus jara, the effect of old age, does not harass a devotee. This is because a devotee follows the instructions and determination of Narada Muni. All devotees are in the cyclic succession stemming from Narada Muni because they worship the deity according to Narada Muni's direction, namely the Narada Pancharatra or the Pancharatriki Vidhi. A devotee follows the principles of Pancharatriki Vidhi as well as Bhagavata Vidhi. Bhagavata Vidhi includes preaching work, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnaho, the hearing and chanting of the glories of Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Pancharatriki Vidhi includes Archanam, Bhadanam, Dasham Sakyam, Atma, Nivedanam. Because a devotee rigidly follows the instructions of Narada Muni, he has no fear of old age, disease, or death. Apparently, a devotee may grow old, but he is not subjected to the symptoms of defeat experienced by a common man in old age. Consequently, old age does not make a devotee fearful of death, as a common man is fearful of death. When jara, or old age, takes shelter of a devotee, kalakanya diminishes the devotee's fear. A devotee knows that after death he is going back home, back to Godhead, therefore he has no fear of death. Thus, instead of depressing a devotee, advanced age helps him become fearless and thus happy. Wow. So, Vrishabham yavananam tvam vine virepsitam patim sankapastvai bhutanam krita kilana rishati. So, Om Ganatya Vrinda Shah Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshura Meditam Yena Trasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, of course, this is the story of Time Girl. That's interesting. Kanya means like a young girl, unmarried girl, actually. And Kala means time. So this is the story of Time Girl looking for a husband. Of course, first we know in this particular chapter she approaches Narada Muni, and Narada Muni says, no way. Because Narada Muni is not interested in this Time Girl. And it's a metaphorical story, actually. And eventually she approaches this Yavana Raj. Yavana Raj means the king of the Yavanas, Malechas, like untouchables. And actually Prabhupada said, very interesting, like the Yavanas, they were, in one particular point, they were kicked out of India, they went to Turkey and Greece. So in one sense, we're descendants of that. At least those of us who are born in the West are descendants of them. But that doesn't mean that we're Yavanas. That's another point that Prabhupada makes here. That of course, Krishna also makes that point in the Gita, Guna Karma Vibhagasha, that someone is known to be of a particular status according to his quality and work, not according to his birth. So how did this misconception arise that one is supposed to be ascertained according to his birth? And what are the repercussions of that misconception, or what were the repercussions in India? It's a very interesting story. So what happens is, if you go back many, many years ago, before any of you were born, a few thousand years ago in India, I go back to the time when you had the original four Vedas, you know, the Rig Veda, Tharva Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, right? Four Vedas. And these Vedas were taught and practiced by Brahmanas. And it's interesting, these original four Vedas, mainly, as Krishna says in the Gita, mainly they're meant for Trigunya Vishaya Veda, each Trigunya Bhavarjana. They're mainly meant for the three modes of material nature. They're mostly demigod worship, which is really interesting. Jai Shishi Radharada Kanta. Mainly they're meant for dealing with the three modes of material nature, and there's mostly hymns to the demigods in the Samaveda. Actually, the Rig Veda, I'm sorry. Samaveda is the music Veda. That's music, Samaveda. And Rig Veda deals with the hymns. And Yajur Veda deals with the swaha, 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 swaha business. You know, sacrifices. So anyway. So they're all, so they're mostly hymns to the demigods. So sometimes you get these Indologists who say that because they're mostly hymns to the demigods, you know, where's Krishna, where's Vishnu, therefore they speculate, therefore the demigods are more important than Vishnu. But that's actually not true. If you think about it, when you approach the government, you usually approach the lower government officials a lot more than you approach the higher government officials, just like, you know, you're going to the city here, city hall, to get permission for a Rath Yatra, whatever you're going to do. But you don't go to the President of the United States. You don't go to Barack Obama. You go to, you know, the Not even the mayor you don't go to. You probably go to some functionary under the mayor. So generally, most of your interactions, even with the government, are on a lower level. So with people who are materialistic, most of their interactions with the absolute truth are going to, or with the hierarchy leading up to the absolute truth, are going to be on a lower level. So that's why most of the hymns in the Vedas are, you know, to the demigods. And actually in the Rig Veda, most of the hymns are to Indra, which is really interesting. Not interesting for us, but they're interesting insofar, this thing keeps going down. They're interesting, that's right. Just leave it, or else there'll be more of a disturbance. So it's interesting that mostly Indra in the beginning days was considered like one of the main demigods to worship. The reason for that is that Indra actually, he likes to be bribed. And he gets angry if he's not bribed, right?
Yeah.
You know, because he tried to destroy or kill all the residents of Vrindavan with the Samvartaka cloud and other things like that. So the point is that most of the hymns are actually the demigods. There is stuff to Vishnu. Om Tad Vishnu Param Pada Pashanti Yat Surya. That verse is there in the Rig Veda, that all the demigods are looking to Vishnu. And also in the Rig Veda, you'll find the Isopanishad. Actually, the Isopanishad is the original Upanishad that's even there in the original Vedas, which is really interesting. The other Upanishads are not. So you get these brahmanas. Let's just go a little history. So you get these brahmanas who are doing all these sacrifices. And society was really dependent on these brahmanas to do the sacrifices. So the brahmanas had what we call in modern days, a monopoly. Monopoly, you know what monopoly is? Now, monopoly means they have an exclusive right. They're the only ones who can do it. You know, they're the only ones who can do it. So it was a means for them to make money. This is what happened in the beginning of Kali Yuga. They used it to make money. So like if you are making money doing something, sacrificing everything, you really don't want the field open up so everybody can do a sacrifice, because then you make less money. Like say, if I'm the only Brahmin here in New Orleans, and everybody who wants to do a sacrifice, you know, housewarming or, you know, sanskara for their child, they have to come to me. I'm going to become extremely wealthy, isn't it? But if you bring in more brahmanas, you say, well, we're going to initiate more brahmanas. I'm going to say, no way. You have to be a brahmin by birth. I'm the only brahmana here because it's going to interfere with my business. This is actually what happened in the beginning of Kali Yuga. Not in such a dramatic fashion, but I'm just giving an example. So the brahmanas wanted to just like keep it within themselves. And they were basically just performing the pujas and didn't do too much philosophy. They're basically just doing, you know, the pujas, making money. Just like I have one disciple in Fiji. His name is Bhagawan. And he's a ritualistic Brahmin. I mean, he's a devotee. But he's a ritualistic Brahmin for his business. That's his, you know, instead of like going to the factory or going down to the French Quarter and selling hats or something like that. That's what he does. You know, he's from South India and he has hair. Not like Satyasai Baba, but you know, ritualistic Brahmanas have to have hair, usually. And so he makes a lot of money. You know, he makes a lot of money. He gets rid of ghosts, and he does this sacrifice, that's right. Very wealthy man. Very, very wealthy man. And originally he was in charge of a South Indian temple, but then he found out being in charge of a temple, you didn't make so much money. It's better to be an independent entrepreneur means businessman, and so this way he's very rich, you know, so I'm doing swaha business every day. So the brahmanas actually instituted this concept. At that time you had to be born in a Brahmin family, and then, you know, my son will be born, he'll be a Brahmin, and of course we understand in the beginning of Kali Yuga you have this Samika Rishi whose son was Sringi, you know, who was like a Kali Yuga Brahmin, what's called a Brahma Bandhu, the son or the relative of a Brahmin or a friend of a Brahmin, and he wasn't actually qualified. So So anyway, so that's really the source of all these things, this hereditary Brahmanism. Now, it's interesting that what happened after that was that there were a whole bunch of people who realized that, hey, we're being cheated and we're not being given spiritual knowledge. And so there developed in India a whole class of men they called the Shramanas, who basically left the cities and went to the forest. You know, they were interested in spiritual life instead. So they went to the cities and went to the left the cities and went to the forest, engaged in chanting and hearing about Krishna and philosophical understandings. And therefore, after the original four Vedas, you have the Brahmana literatures, you have the Aranyakas, which are that means the forest literatures, and then finally, you have the Upanishads, which deal more with philosophical stuff. This is a whole history of the development. Of course, Srila Vyasadeva is actually the author of all the Vedic literatures, but there's people who realized them or copied them down or were interested in it, whereas the original four Vedic literatures, only the ritualistic Brahmanas were interested in. And so then you had the Brahmana literature, Aranyakas, and finally the Upanishads that dealt with more philosophical literatures, philosophical points. And then itinerant sages, itinerant means that they didn't have any, you know, means or any, they just wandered around, they didn't have any place to live. They actually developed this whole philosophical portion of the Vedas, and they were engaged in this Bhagavad Vidhi. So here you see what Prabhupada is describing here in the purport. There's the Bhagavad Vidhi and Pancharatriki Vidhi. But then, interestingly enough, you know, those who didn't engage in deity worship, after a while, by not having the Bhagavad Vidhi, you had some really like deviant activities going on in India, like some of the what's called the tantric sects. Now, the word tantra is not a bad word. Tantra means like that which connects you, basically. You know, so like you had, so we have Vaishnava tantra, like the Narada Pancharatra and the other Vaishnava literatures. That which connect, that would give instruction on how to advance in spiritual life. But there's a whole class of people, the tantric people, who actually developed, let's say independently of the bona fide Vaishnava or Vedic tantras, some really weird activities like eating out of the skull. Maybe you've heard about this before. Or, you know, walking around with ashes all over, or doing like weird sexual activities, and they developed philosophies around these things that had nothing to do with the Vedic, original Vedic literatures, nothing. So that's the danger. Reason I'm not trying to give a whole history, but that's the danger of actually going completely with Bhagavat Vidhi. Like Prabhupada said, we need Bhagavat Vidhi and Pancharatriki Vidhi. Both are two tracks in which the train of Krishna consciousness proceeds. So the Bhagavad Vidhi is like the chanting and spiritual hearing, chanting and remembering, you know, and hearing about Krishna's pastimes. But the Pancharatriki Vidhi is that which regulates us, which is what Prabhupada mentions here in this purport. Prabhupada mentions Pancharatriki Vidhi includes archanam, bandhanam, dasham, sakyam, atmani, vedinam. What does that mean? Archanam means what we're doing here. Right? Worship of the deities. Vandanam means offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And these prayers are prayers of supplication, prayers of surrender, prayers begging for something. Anyway, there's different varieties of prayers. Dasham, it means service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sakyam, understanding the Lord. And this is not, the Sakyam in this particular verse can be understood in Navabhakti process, can be understood in two ways. One is, the Lord is my best friend, he's always protecting me, he's always maintaining me. Another way is, when you actually become super advanced in Krishna consciousness, then you're running in the fields of Vrindavan and the Lord is actually your friend in a particular mellow. And then finally, Atmani Vedanam. So these are very important processes. The Navabhakti process it's so important that we should concentrate on all the activities in Navabhakti. Of course, as Prabhupada did say elsewhere, that the Shravanam and Kirtanam are the most important. They're the most important activities. Shravanam and Kirtanam, hearing and chanting about Krishna. But if you don't execute the other activities, what is the danger? Then you have sahajaism. Like if you, like let's say if you hear and chant about Krishna's intimate pastimes in Vrindavan, let's say you read the Govinda Lilamrita or some intimate book like that, or Ujjala Nilamani, which is a very intimate book. Ujjala Nilamani is the postgraduate study of the Nectar of Devotion, or the Bhakti Rasamrita Sunda, which is written by Srila Rupa Goswami. And Nectar of Devotion is part one, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is part one, Ujjala Nilamani is part two. But let's say you read these books, and you just like read them and just get into the pastime, but you're really not fixed in your Pancharatriki Vidhi. That is your regulation, you know, rising early every morning, sitting down and chanting your rounds, you know, doing it in a regulated fashion. Pancharatriki Vidhi means regulation, basically. Or worshiping the deities in a regulated fashion. Of course, those who are actually on the spontaneous platform, they may worship the deities in a spontaneous fashion, just like Sanatan Goswami. Or even before that, let's talk about Advaitacharya. Actually, Advaitacharya found Madan Mohan. He was called Madan Gopal at that time. And when he was in Vrindavan, and then he gave Madan Gopal, or Madan Mohan as he's now known nowadays, to this Brahmana Chobe in Mathura. You probably heard this story before. And in the Brahmana Chobe's home, the Brahmana didn't really know all the rules and regulations of Pancharatriki Vidhi, so he just sat the deity down at the dinner table with his whole family, and the deity was sitting just one chair, and everybody had a chair, or they sat on the floor at that time. And the deity was playing, just like Bhadri plays, the deity was playing, you know, whatever the child, his child played. Chobe had a son. So the son was actually, I guess, playing marbles with the deity, because that's what they do in Vrindavan, they play marbles. They're very expert in marble playing, isn't it? So the deity was playing marbles with the child, and you know, and so Sanatan Goswami later on, he went to the house and he saw this, and he said to Chobe, he said, this is not proper deity worship. You know, the deity should sit on the altar. He's not there with your son, you know, on his bed and everything like that. This is ridiculous. So that night, Sanatan Goswami had a dream. And in that dream, the deity appeared to him and said, why did you spoil my fun? So if one's on the spontaneous platform, you understand that's how one can worship the deities. Spontaneous platform means Vishaya Chariya Kabe Shudahabi Mana Kabe Hamahi Rabo Sri Vrindavana. That one has no more Vishaya. You know, no more ignorance, nescience in the brain. It's just like no more Nartis, for those of you who don't know what Vishaya means. Kama Krodha Mada Matsarya Bharyabhaya. No more of those things. Then someone can actually worship the deities in that mood. But until that platform comes, you know, it will come if we follow the progressive path of Krishna consciousness, then one should follow the Pancharatriki Vidhi. In other words, you worship the deity at specific times, like we're doing here. It's not that we'll worship Radharada Kanta when we feel like it. You understand? The Pancharatriki Vidhi says no. You have to offer it this time in the morning, you know, 7 o'clock, 7:30, whatever it is, 12 o'clock, every day. Punctuality, like Prabhupada said, punctuality and cleanliness are extremely important. Whereas Sanatana Goswami, he had the deity hanging from the tree, and the deity complained, you know, Madan Gopal or Madan Mohan, same personality, he complained that you're not offering me anything, just all these old dried bread balls that you're cooking in the sun. And Sanatana Goswami said, you know, you asked me to compile Vaishnava literatures, I don't have time to run around begging and getting you more. So just have to arrange for your own salt if you want it. And so the deity did arrange for his own salt. So, but that's a pure devotee in the spontaneous platform, you understand? Did he arrange for his own salt by arranging for a boat that was going with a salt on the Yamuna to get stuck, and then the boatman came to Sanatana Goswami. Sanatana Goswami said, pray to the deities, and the deities arranged for a rain for the boat to be lifted up. And then, anyway, the deity had plenty of salt at that time, and also a temple, because the guy who owned the boat actually arranged to build a temple for Madan Mohan, the Madan Mohan temple. So, anyway, so with our platform, we should be very conscious about regulation. You know, that going to sleep, waking up early, extremely important in our platform. Later on, when you're a pure devotee, you can get up at any time in the morning. You can be an avaduta if you want. Just like we know one devotee whose name was even Avaduta. You remember him? Anyway, when you're a pure devotee, you can be an avaduta. Like Lord Nityananda, you know, he's the avaduta, you know, he did wild things, you know. Sometimes he'd throw his clothes off and run around, and Lord Chaitanya would come and cover him up. What are you doing, Nityananda? You know, that's avaduta. But at this particular juncture in our devotional service, regulation is extremely important, especially the deity worship, the archana, cleanliness, and all those things are extremely important. And Prabhupada said, if we follow this, Pancharatri Ki Vidhi, we will be healthier. And Prabhupada makes that point here. And then old age will not harass us, and then we can go on serving even if we're 80 years old. Like Prabhupada gave that example. Prabhupada himself was serving, you know, like he was 80 years old and he was running around. He could walk faster than us. We were young people, and Prabhupada actually could outpace us when we went for morning walks with him. Now, the final point here, I don't want to go on too long, the final point here is really interesting. When jara or old age takes shelter of a devotee, kalakanya diminishes the devotee's fear. So this is a really interesting statement. And also Prabhupada said, instead of depressing a devotee, advanced age helps him become fearless and less happy. So, you know, I was just reading yesterday about people who had some terminal disease, like had cancer, and how they became fearful and, you know, in complete anxiety, and they need counseling and all those other things like that. So that's understandable. I mean, obviously we should be a little compassionate. But for someone who is actually taking shelter of Krishna, then death actually becomes something that they look forward to. I mean, not that they want to die, not that they're depressed, thinking, you know, oh, I want to die, this material world is so miserable. Oh, get me out of here, Krishna. I mean, actually, that's a desire for mukti. That's not Krishna consciousness. I've given the example before that when I first joined the movement, I had that desire. I was praying to Krishna every night to kill me so I could go back to God. And I was, you know, I had my bead bag in my hand and I was chanting, said, Krishna, Krishna, please kill me tonight. Don't let me wake up. I want to go back to Godhead. That's not what a pure devotee thinks. A pure devotee understands he's going to leave his body. He doesn't want to leave his body any earlier than Krishna wants. He wants to accept whatever Krishna's arrangement is. He's not depressed. He's not unhappy. But he looks forward to it. It's just like a trip that someone's going to go on. Just like if I tell you that you're going to go to Vrindavan or something like that for Kartik, right? If I tell the devotees, hey, you're going to go to Vrindavan for Kartik, you're going to spend 2 weeks worshiping, you know, Govardhan, going for Prabhupada's disappearance day celebration, and chanting, dancing, doing the Brajamando Parikrama or something like that, then probably for the whole year you'll be looking forward to it, right? You think, and that'll actually enthuse you as you're working, won't it? I mean, as you're working real hard, thinking, well, that's coming up and only 2 more months to go, only 1 more month to go. Wow, I can't wait. I hope I don't get sick before, you know, the plane trip. And you're all enlivened. You understand? It's very enlivening. You know, if you're actually Krishna conscious, if you're not Krishna conscious, not enlivened, to go for a car ticket, then you'll just see the pigs there in Vrindavan and everything. It depends on your frame of consciousness. But so then you're counting down the days when you can actually go do Braj. So it's the same way with a devotee leaving his body. He's just saying, well, he can't wait. Not that he makes it happen any sooner. But he says, you know, wow, this is really great. You know, I can't wait till I can just like dive into, you know, my spiritual body, you know, I hope I leave my body in a holy place, but wherever I leave, it's up to Krishna. I want the devotees to be around me chanting. So it's like something to look forward to, like a vacation. So this is, it's really interesting. So in that way, Kalakanya, or time girl, as described here, is something to look forward to for a devotee. And even old age, let's say even old age in the body, because the senses become more peaceful. You know, it's actually a benefit for a devotee. When one's very young, you know, you want to play around. Just like many years ago, not many years ago, about 5 years ago, I used to play volleyball a lot. 5 or 7 years ago, I used to play volleyball. Okay. So I was having a good time playing volleyball. You know what volleyball is? You have that in India too, volleyball. So I was playing volleyball, and then one time, you know, I hit the ball and I threw my arm out. You understand, like, and the arm was going, you know, wouldn't have happened when I was 20 years old like that. When I was 20 years old, it would have, you know, go on like that. So then I realized, oh, I'm getting older. No more volleyball for me. So instead of thinking, oh God, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? You know, I want to play volleyball. Let me go to the doctor. Was it sports medicine, right? Let me find a sports medicine specialist. I have insurance. You know, he'll take care of me. That's a big field now, sports medicine. You make a lot of money in that. Maybe you should go into that. Instead of oncology. Instead of oncology, you can go into sports medicine. It's not so heavy as oncology. So instead of doing that, I just said, well, maybe Krishna doesn't want me to play volleyball anymore, you know. Maybe I'll have a few more minutes to, you know, serve him during the day. Instead, you know, I'll just go for a walk and then I can chant japa. Because you can't really chant japa while you're playing volleyball. I mean, I couldn't. Even with the clicker, you can't go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. You know, there's just no way. No way I can chant japa. Yeah. But if I exercise like Prabhupada prescribed, you know, walking, you can chant japa, listen to tapes, and do all sorts of things. So I was just thinking, well, Krishna's trying to limit me, but that's good. That's good that Krishna's limiting me in this way, because it'll help me progress in Krishna consciousness. So even old age, you know, the senses become quieter. If one is following Krishna consciousness, I mean, if one simply gets some monkey glands implanted, that's another business you can do. That's the biggest medical field, is actually increasing people's lust. You know, prescribing Viagra for people. So, in the old days, Prabhupada talks about how they used to take the monkeys from Vrindavan and take their sex glands out and implant them in someone. Prabhupada said they would take the sex glands from one monkey and put it in another monkey, referring to the human being monkey. So, anyway, so old age is just nice like that. You know, one becomes more peaceful, the senses are quieter, one's not is agitated by playful, childish things. And also one has a lot of experience in the world too, you know, isn't it? A lot of experience that one gets after 40, 50, 60 years in the Krishna consciousness movement. So therefore it's actually benediction. So this is pretty much commenting on what Prabhupada said in his purport. I think we covered most of the points. Any questions or comments about any of these things? Questions or comments? No?
First statement of Srila Prabhupada's purport says that people who don't follow the morning regulation, they're considered yavanas. How do you see that? Do you see perspective?
That's a very interesting question. People don't follow the morning regulation, consider yavanas. Yavanas. Not yavanas, yavanas. Anyway, yavanas means young people. Yavanas means low-class people. How do I see that? I see that, first of all, we have to understand from a, you know, NBC perspective, that Prabhupada is actually thinking compassionately. Why would Prabhupada say that? Because Prabhupada is concerned. He's not saying it, like when we designate people, we call people a name, we're not usually doing it out of compassion, we're doing it out of some other need being fulfilled. But Prabhupada has a need to for the spiritual life, for our spiritual life. So Prabhupada is saying that out of extreme compassion, understanding that that's necessary for our spiritual advancement. And that's how I would understand what Prabhupada is saying. Although, you know, Prabhupada was a very practical person too. He understood. It's very interesting when you take statements of Prabhupada and take them out of context, you can oftentimes misunderstand Prabhupada. I can understand the contextual situation why Prabhupada would say that, you know, because Prabhupada was speaking out of compassion. Because Prabhupada's, you know, Kripa Sindhuye, which he's an ocean of mercy, an ocean of compassion. So his desire was for our benefit that he said it, not simply to smash us. You know, if I say that someone's a yovana, I'm saying it, you know, basically to establish my superiority over them. So, but in other instances, Prabhupada was very understanding. If someone had to work at night or something like that, then Prabhupada didn't smash someone because they had to work at night. And, you know, they couldn't get up early because they had to work at night. So I think we have to balance Prabhupada's statement by his other statements or other interactions with people and understand. I mean, Prabhupada gave many, many different statements. I mean, one point Prabhupada said, like about hair, Prabhupada said, you know, the Prabhupada said everyone should be shaved head. But then another time Prabhupada said those who are doing business, they should, you know, can have hair like a gentleman. You understand? So there's or one point Prabhupada said that all sannyasis should travel. Sannyasis should never remain in one place very long. Another time Prabhupada said to a sannyasi, you should stay in this place and never leave this place. So he said it's contradictory, but you have to understand the context in which Prabhupada said it. You know, so who was he speaking to? That's why Prabhupada was very reluctant to have his letters published, because they were all contextual, not all, but most of them were contextual instructions. And people would just take them out of context, which people are doing nowadays, and fighting with Prabhupada's words against each other. You know, they're having a quote wars with each other. You know, Prabhupada said this. And you can present a contradictory quote. You know, Prabhupada said that. And I don't get into these things. I'm not a member of any conference. Like they have this one Prabhupada disciple conference where they engage in quote wars on a regular basis. It's just a waste of time. The whole point is to understand what Prabhupada's manovishtam, Prabhupada's intention, what Prabhupada wanted. You understand? And just to take Prabhupada's instructions out of context was not only a waste of time, but you're going to probably be committing offenses against Vaishnavas. Isn't it? You know, so you have to be real careful in that respect.
When do you actually say that something is an endeavor for Krishna versus over-endeavor?
Over-endeavor is where you lose your sadhana. Or you become crazy. Because we can endeavor like crazy for Krishna. But if we lose sight, Krishna says, that's easy to understand. Krishna says in the Gita, in every endeavor, just remember me and be conscious of me. So if you endeavor not remembering Krishna, that's either you're not doing your sadhana or it's over-endeavor. You're just like passionately endeavoring. But we can work for Krishna like crazy if we're remembering why we're doing what we're doing. But if you're forgetting, becoming passionate and angry, that's over-endeavor. And you're neglecting your sadhana, neglecting...
Getting angry.
Yeah, so that means there's some over-endeavor there. Or... it doesn't mean you should reduce your working. It means you have to figure out how to adjust yourself so you can remember Krishna throughout all your activities. I'm not saying, you know, reduce the amount of working hours. That's not necessarily, it may be what you need to do, but it's not necessarily what you need to do. Maybe you need to, you know, read for 15 minutes, a half hour a day to just focus your mind. And that way you can do all those hours of service. But if you find yourself forgetting Krishna, forgetting the purpose of what you're doing, that's over-endeavor, and you've got to make some adjustment You got to make some adjustments so that you can remember Krishna. And then, you know, for me, that adjustment is sadhana. You know, early in the morning, I wake up early every morning. I don't stay up late, as everybody knows. I go to sleep early, I wake up early, and I'm very happy to sit down. I mean, this morning, I chanted my rounds. I didn't finish all of them because I take a walk in the afternoon. That's my standard. But I also did my whole puja for the deities, Rigovardhan. I bathed, I dressed, I decorated the deities. I'll get flowers later for the deities. You know, I did my puja for Govardhan, went to Mangalarti, went to the morning program, isn't it? So, you know, that helps me be focused the rest of the day. With regulation, yeah. Yeah, so, and deity worship is important. Like, I do my puja every day for Govardhan. I mean, Govardhan puja is not, Govardhan puja, anyway. The puja for Govardhan, don't say Govardhan puja because that usually indicates the time of the year, but the puja for Govardhan is actually not as regulated as the puja for the deities here. You can do it, you know, different times of the day, but you know, whenever, but it's really nice. Like, we're talking about this dasyam. It really reminds me that I'm a servant. Why? Because before I eat, everything I eat has to be offered to Govardhan. You know, so it really reminds me that I have to serve him. So it focuses my mind. That's, you know, it's Pancharatri Ki Vidhi. So it helps focus my mind that I'm a servant. He's the boss. You know, taking my deities around with me, I remember that they're the boss, not someone for me to enjoy. That's the whole point of deity worship. Dasyam. That's the whole point of Archanam. The whole point of Archanam is Dasyam. And Vandanam. But Dasyam particularly is the most important aspect. Most important thing you're supposed to learn from deity worship is that I'm a servant and he's the master. Krishna is the master. Gopi Bharata Padakamala Dasa 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 no Dasa. I'm a servant of a servant of a servant. That's what you're supposed to learn. So that helps me. And then I can engage in so many activities during the day. And I'm always remembering he's the boss. And by having, you know, by having Govardhan right there, right in front of me all the time in my room, the boss is always there. Isn't it? I mean, it's like if you're at work and your supervisor is always in the same room, wow, you're really going to behave yourself, isn't it? But if you don't, or you know, if you, I'm not saying everyone should have their deity, but you have a picture just to remember that Krishna is the boss. Somehow or other, that consciousness has to be inscribed in our hearts. That consciousness has to be embedded in our hearts that we're the servants and Krishna is the boss. And that, and the Archanam helps one with it. The Bhagavad Vidhi helps one. I mean, the Pancharatriki Vidhi. If you just engage in Bhagavad Vidhi, there's the danger that you're going to begin to think you're the enjoyer. Which is what happened to many of the people. You know, I got all these Vaishnava, deviant Vaishnava sects too, as well as the tantric sects. The, you know, so many deviant sects in India. I mean, it's just amazing. You know, the Shaivites, all these sects of Shaivas. Shaivites, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And studying so beautifully, but the enjoying spirit is so much there, and it's really like, oh, okay, well, that's what's going to have to come next is the puja.
Yeah, the puja, yeah.
I mean, it's its own time, and it's when the global consciousness is a little more ready, but it's clear that that would be the next, like, medicine for that.
That's good. That's a good point. I appreciate that. I never thought about that, but you're absolutely right. That's what has to come next. In order to establish that we're servants, yeah. Great. Great point.
Yeah, also, yeah, the proper previous is saying that kind of is
Kala. Kala, yeah, Kala Khan.
So,
old age.
She's cursed to Narada Muni, not to stay in one place. But Narada Muni also saying you're so compassionate.
Yeah, he helps find her husband.
Yeah. So how? A little bit I'm confused. How Narada Muni helping?
Why does he help her? Because old age even for non-devotees, is actually a very good thing, because ultimately, why is old age there? You tell me. What is the whole teleological, what is the whole purpose of things? To learn life after life, that you can't enjoy the material world. So old age, death, disease, all these things are actually arranged by Krishna to teach you a lesson that this is not your place. Just like in the heavenly planets, there's no old age in the heavenly planets. There's death after some time, but a long time. And so they can't, it's very hard for them to figure out now's the time to, you know, tato brahma jigyasa. Now's the time to actually take up spiritual life seriously, because everything, can you imagine if you were living in, and there was no problem with money, you never got sick, your wife never argued with you, you were extremely handsome, you never got old. I mean, you wouldn't, I'm not saying you, but most people would not be that spiritual or as interested in spiritual life, right? So these miseries are actually mercy. That's why Maya also means mercy. So anyway, old age is actually part of Krishna's plan. That's why Narada Muni is cooperating with her. Not against Krishna's plan. Old age is good because it reminds us of the temporary nature of this world, and it reminds us that, you know, there's something else there, because we don't, in other words, we don't accept old age gladly. That means that our real nature is something else. In other words, it's not natural for us to be old. That means we're actually conscious in a certain level, we're conscious that actually we're meant to stay young.
Yeah, also these also just remind you to your conversation. Like when people going through that, mentally we also changing. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like previously we are thinking we did so many wrong things. So now I'm going to always not to do like that kind of thing. So make us focus to more Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, it helps us. Joy. Hare Krishna. Where's Shredadev? He's in India? He's coming back?
I think so.
You think so? I hope so. This next week he's coming back, or?
Should be.
Good. Tell him to come back. Give him an order.
You can do that.
I can give that. He doesn't listen to me. Coming back tomorrow? Tomorrow. Good. Good. I miss him. Okay, I think we have to end. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Gopal, Hare Krishna, are you there? I think you're there. Could you hear? I can see your chat now. Yeah, fruit and whatever nuts you have. And a and a plate that I can offer to the deities.
Okay.
okay, gotta go, bye bye. I'll get to turn it off and go back to my room. Haribol. Padre. Padre. Let's go. Everything all right, Sadly? Don't worry, be happy. Your son really misses you. He was crying.
No, but you saw what I set up for him, though.
Yeah, yeah, with the garden, that's good.
That's...
He likes that, but he really misses you. Really? More than just the smoking, or? Well, just tell me what he is, the truth.
When I came, yeah, I can't, you know that, that song.
I gotta offer that to the D's, yeah.
You know that song?
What song?
100 Buffalo.
Yeah, yeah, he was singing it.
He didn't sing it.
He was using
but
it.
But I just opened the door.